Hey there, tax fans. Welcome to State Tax Talks with me, your host, Joe Tantillo. I'm a tax attorney at the Hotch & Russ Law Firm looking to explore the nuances of state and local tax law. Here on the show, our goal is to keep tax informative, simple, and fun. So if you're ready to talk tax, turn up the volume and dive into this episode of State Tax Talks. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of State Tax Talks. I am your host, Joe Tantillo. I am joined again this week by Liz Pascal and Chris Doyle. We are going to be continuing our discussion of the pass-through entity tax. This is part two of what we were discussing previously. Well, let's talk about the calculation of the pass-through entity tax, and we'll start with the pass-through entity's taxable income. How is the PTET determined? And really, to get to the root of that question, how do you determine the pass-through entity's taxable income?
Okay. So an S corporation, as far as what income or how we look at the income, it really is going to follow the S corporation return. But as far as what income goes into the base, for S corporations, we have two kinds of PTET electing S corporations. We have an electing resident S corporation. And in that case, right, if the S corporation is owned solely by New York resident individuals, trusts, or estates, then it's the entirety of the S corporation income. But if not all of the owners are resident individuals, trust, or estates, it is just a standard electing S corporation PTET entity, and it will only be New York sourced income whose distributive shares are received directly by an individual, trust, or estate. So when you have an S corporation that's owned by residents, they potentially get a lot more benefit of the tax that's being shifted from the individual owners to the S corporation and therefore getting deducted federally, particularly if you have an S corporation that doesn't just have operating income and has lots of investment income.
Mm-hmm. Partnerships are different calculation-wise. Number one, they exclude from the tax base any income that would be allocated to an ineligible owner. So as I said before, if you're not an individual or a trust that's permitted to be a PTET-like eligible owner, then they're going to exclude that income from the base. So if you have a corporate partner, any income that would be allocable to the corporate partner would be excluded from the base. Then they take the eligible owners and they put them into two silos, the resident owners and the non-resident owners. With respect to the ownership shares of the folks in the resident silo, all of the flow-through income goes into the PTET base. So all of their distributive share of income goes into the PTET base. With respect to the non-resident silo owners, the aggregate of the distributive share of income sourced to New York is in the base. So they have an apportionment or an allocation methodology that will allow into the base only the amounts that are apportioned to New York or allocated to New York for the non-resident silo.
And for both the S-Corp context and the partnership context, are they essentially just using the entity's business allocation percentage to determine the sourcing piece of this for the non-residents?
Yes.
This is the one downside of a podcast, especially a podcast that we haven't done a video element of yet. Hopefully, those of you out there listening are getting the gist of how this works. It's not overly complicated, but writing it out can be helpful. Okay. Are there items of income that are specifically excluded from the PTE taxable income pool?
I would think that if you had, in the context of a partnership, if you've got income from a non-business intangible, for instance, dividends or gain, that's going to be excluded because it wouldn't be included in New York source income. But other than that, if you've got an S corporation that's not a resident electing S corporation where all the owners are residents, you'd exclude all of the non-New York source income from the PTET base.
Can you end up with a negative or a zero number for the PTE taxable income? And if yes, what happens then?
So you can definitely end up with no net PTET taxable income, and that's certainly happened. So for example, right, if your partnership return shows a loss, it could be how it shakes out between the resident and non-resident pool that there's actual PTET taxable income. But absent that nuance, I think, and even so, I think unless you have a special allocation, if the partnership shows a loss in a year, it would not have any PTET taxable income, in which case, if it's made the election, it just files a zero return. But actually, New York has made clear in its FAQs that a return is absolutely required if you've made the election, no matter what.
Interesting. And can it get a refund, presumably, for the estimated payments it's made? Or can it carry forward the estimated payments?
No carry forwards, you can get it refunded.
Interesting. So you have to do a lot of thinking here, accountants, and a lot of predicting when making those estimated payments.
By March 15th, when you decide to make the election. Not by the accountant, though.
So accountants, think about it, understand it, know what you're doing, and then, you know, it's kind of in the hands of someone else to make the election anyway. Any other immediate thoughts or comments on the calculation of the PTE taxable income before we move on to discussing the credit?
A lot of times on March 15th, your accountant thinks your income's going to be either de minimis or zero, right? Many partnerships have serial losses year after year after year. And then it turns out in August, all of a sudden some private equity firm wants to buy your business for $1 billion. We get numerous calls every August and September from accountants that are saying, you know, what do I do now? I didn't make the PTET election. Everybody, you know, assumed that we were going to have a loss in the entity, but now we're going to have $1 billion gain. And the answer is there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. And so I think other than, you know, maybe making estimated payments that I think you would have made at the individual level anyway, if there's some possibility that, you know, there could be some, you know, significant event, sale, you know, income events later on in the year, you're better off making the election and then having to file a zero or de minimis return. I mean, you know, it's a pain, but at the end of the day, better, you know, have to do that and the cost of doing that than missing out on being able to deduct a significant amount of state tax that you won't get to do otherwise if you haven't made the election.
With respect to, you know, making essentially a conservative PTET election in the anticipation of a possible large income event, are there penalties for underpayment of estimated PTET taxes?
Yeah, they work pretty much the same way as personal income tax penalties, yep. Underpayment of estimates.
Got it. So probably in the event that you may have a large income event, probably better to overestimate and avoid penalties if you don't know the exact figures, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, the difficulty with that is often like you don't have the cash,
yeah.
Right? You're not necessarily going to take some big hunk of cash that you haven't received from a transaction and give it to the government to hold on to. So it's always a balance, I think, of,
right.
You know, risking those underpayment penalties versus giving the government lots of money that you may have to ask for back and could have used for other things.
Right. And I misstated that there was really nothing that, you know, a late arising in the tax year transaction, there was nothing that the owners could do. Well, they could always defer the transaction to the following year and then make the PTET election in the following year. Hmm. So there is a strategy, but it's usually not a good one because the sellers usually want to make sure that they're going to sell and they usually want the money. So deferring it is perhaps not the best thing from a practical standpoint, even though from a tax standpoint it may be beneficial. The other thing that I suppose you could do is sell for a note and defer some of the gain to the next year and then make the election in the next year. Sell assets at the entity level for a note, and then as the payments come in, you can claim PTET benefits on that.
Is there a reason they decided to make the election so early in the calendar year? It seems like it makes it so that there's a decent amount of guesswork on the part of the entities.
It was probably not a good idea. It was probably not a well thought out decision because, for instance, New Jersey, it's a year later. You could make the election in March 15th of the year after the tax year.
And by the way, almost every other state, there's like four states, I think, maybe Michigan, Hawaii, a couple others, that have an early election. And every other state has it either on or with a timely filed return.
Right. Yeah, that just seems to me to make much more sense.
Yeah. Now, I think you get into more problems with that late election about estimated payments, because then you have a lot more issues of entities that haven't made estimated payments, individuals who have made all these estimated payments. And so there's, you know, money going in, then a lot more potential penalties against entities that haven't paid in. But the flip side is if they're making the election, it's because it clearly is going to have some benefit rather than either having taxpayers who lose out on this benefit, which that's the whole point of the PTET, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is to help businesses and individuals in our state who are now have an overall higher tax bill because of the SALT cap, and then they make it harder to make that determination of whether they should elect in or not.
Right. Well, I'll keep eyes on the pending bill that may change the election date. But this seems as good a time as any to pivot into the next portion of this discussion, which is about the credit, which is everybody's favorite, credits and then the add back. We'll start with the credit and who can claim the credit. And I think there's been some kind of previewing of this already with some of the lack of eligible entities and owners, I should say.
I will try my best to phrase it succinctly and properly, and then Liz can confirm whether I'm right or wrong. The folks that can claim the credit are the same people for whom a contribution to the PTET base was made, and the credit should be equal to the amount of their contribution to the PTET base.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, that also answers how the credit itself is calculated. So we often say it's a one-to-one credit. Is that fair? Dollar-for-dollar credit? Is that more accurate?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Exactly right.
So the other part of the credit is this add-back that has to be done at the individual level on the state return, which I'll be honest, when I was first trying to put this all together, confused me as well. And we spend a lot more time thinking about this and talking about this than people who are going through it and just trying to reap the benefits. So can either of you just explain this general concept of what is this add back I'm referring to and why is it done? How is it done and why is it done? Because I know that this throws a lot of people, especially because in the first iteration of the legislation for New York, there was confusion about whether the entity had to also add back the PTET, which created some circular math. But let's talk about it. Let's break it all down.
So the add back at the individual level, at the individual owner level, is equal to the amount of the credit. So that's actually pretty easy, right? The calculation is made for you. The reason for that is policy-based, which is New York State doesn't want to give you a state tax deduction for the state tax that you pay. Now, in a more simple world, you'd only have to worry about what your federal taxable income is, and that would be your state taxable income. But because somebody said, read my lips, there will be no tax increases, most politicians don't want to increase your taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, they do base broadeners. And these base broadeners include modifications as you go from federal income to New York State income to create a bigger bucket because they can't change the rate. And the bigger bucket is, I guess, adding back state and local taxes that are paid to New York in particular. You know, depreciation, if you've taken bonus depreciation for federal tax purposes, you can't take that for New York purposes. But those base broadeners create these modifications to income, and that's why New York makes you add back your PTET tax credit.
So then the other piece of this is, as you said, Joe, early on there was a lot of confusion because New York initially was saying, no, other than the individuals adding back the credit, there is no other add back. Well, lo and behold, they realized, no, we do think there should be an add back, and there should be an add back at the entity level. And then just to make things a little more complicated, because New York is good at that, they said at the entity level, you add back not just the amount of PTET paid and deducted, but actually the entire amount that is deducted, right? So for example, if the entity made $100,000 of estimated PTET payments and in 2023 deducted it on their 2023 federal income tax return, calculated and filed their New York PTET, the PTET was actually only $75,000, and they get a $25,000 refund. New York says, actually, you have to add back that entire $100,000 that you paid and deducted, but then is silent about that $25,000 refund of PTET that you're going to get in 2024 after you file the return, and actually then have to include in federal income as a refund. So that to me is a little unclear, but yes, you have to add that back as well as there is an add back for PTET paid to other states.
That is definitely where it starts to get more more complicated. You guys would have laughed when I was first like trying to like map out how this works to understand the benefit. I was literally had a whiteboard going in my office where I was like, okay, you have the entity at the top and then it pays the tax, and then that's going to reduce its taxable income, which is going to mean you have a smaller distributive share, which is going to reduce your federal taxable income, but then it's going to flow through to you. And I was literally going through step by step to try to understand it.
The cascade is difficult. And the other shoe that kind of falls that, you know, Liz mentioned that you have to add back taxes paid to other states, but you get a credit. You, the individual owner, mm-hmm. gets a credit against your New York tax for the taxes that your entity pays to other states.
Right. For substantially similar. So for these PTET taxes the entity has paid to another jurisdiction, you, the individual, get a credit in New York if you're a New York resident. But New York does not give a credit. For example, Chris mentioned the California franchise tax. These legacy entity level taxes are not considered substantially similar, and New York does not credit those for residents.
And the New York State website has a list of substantially similar taxes just
right.
for this reason, like so you can tell which taxes are going to be creditable and which are not.
Got it. But so ultimately, New York is giving you the credit to basically compensate you for the taxes that you, the individual, have paid because you are an owner of the entity, even though the entity itself is paying. But you have to add back the PTET at the individual level so you're not double dipping on your deduction at the federal level as well as the state level.
Yeah, I don't.
Yes.
You lost
yes.
me.
Yeah.
When you try to kind of say it all in a single sentence, it gets much more complicated. And hopefully I didn't muddy the waters. But my evidence teacher in law school always told me, if you can understand the reason for a rule, you'll never forget the rule itself. So I find myself always trying to process what is the reason for this rule. And it helps me remember.
My teacher always told me, shut up.
All right. One more question on the credit here. Do I have to claim the credit on my individual return in the same year that the PTET return is filed, or can I claim it at a later date?
You have to claim the credit for the same year
which
the PTET was paid.
Yeah. So I can't take a 2023 credit for a 2022 PTET payment.
Correct.
Got it. Let's talk briefly about New York City's PTET. This is newer. It was in last year's budget legislation, correct? Fiscal year 23, 24. Is this 24, 25 now?
We're in 24, 25 budget legislation.
Yeah.
So this was in 22, 23.
Yeah. And it is mostly similar from my understanding, but are there any major differences other than that S Corps, generally speaking, are excluded?
As Liz said before, if every owner is a New York City resident.
Yes, then they're not excluded.
Right. And just kind of taking a step back, why does New York City need to have a PTET? Well, that's because if you're a resident of New York City, you have an income tax, you know, up to 4% roughly on your taxable income. So it's for the honor of living in New York City, you have to pay a tax of 4% of your income. So if some of that income is from a flow-through entity, New York City wants to give you a credit, have the same sort of PTET, you know, method in place for you to be able to get a federal tax deduction for that 4% tax that you pay in New York City, and that's the New York City PTET.
And, you know, I think that's a key point, that this is because of that New York City resident tax, because I get asked frequently, well, does this offset the taxes that my entity currently pays to New York City? So for an S corporation, New York City general corporation tax, for a partnership LLC, New York City unincorporated business tax. And the answer is no. These taxes exist in addition to the GCT, the UBT, will continue to be there as long as you have Nexus in New York City. This, you know, New York City PTE tax is only to offset that individual resident tax.
Is it a separate election?
Yes. And you can't elect into the New York City PTET if you haven't already elected into the New York State PTET. I don't know why you would, but that is the rule.
Interesting. We talked a little bit about earlier some of the differences between New York's PTET and PTETs in other states, but I wanted to give us a broader opportunity to have a discussion about some of the biggest differences, one of which we've already highlighted, which is the date of the election being much, much earlier than some of these other states.
We talked about the add back for the credit in New York, and that is so New York State doesn't lose money, right? If there was not an add back, then New York State would lose money as a result of the PTET. The make whole provisions in other states are sometimes either giving a credit for less than 100% of the PTET paid, or in some instances, they've got other workarounds, like the PTET being a higher rate than the highest personal income tax rate. So there may be different methods to make sure the states aren't hurt. And we already talked about Connecticut and Massachusetts maybe giving you even less of a credit because they're using this as a revenue raiser. And, you know, one of the things I always worry about when they create a tax, even though, you know, the tax might be for a particular purpose or is not a revenue raiser for the state, well, once it's on the books, getting rid of the tax is pretty difficult. There is no particular sunset for New York's tax, is there?
There is not.
And in many states, there is a sunset, and you can talk about why that is.
Yeah, and I'll mention California because I think it has some interesting differences, both good and bad. So as Chris just mentioned, California does have a sunset provision that the PTET sunsets when the federal SALT cap sunset. So it's tied to that. So it doesn't stay on the books forever. A couple of other interesting things about California. So individual owners have to consent to have their distributive shares included in the PTET taxable base, right? So where that might be an advantage, right? So you have a partnership and it makes the PTET election, and you've got an individual owner that's a resident of a state that maybe doesn't give a resident credit for a PTET paid to another jurisdiction. And they might say, you know what, I don't want to have my distributive share included in the PTET base. Now, that gets complicated as far as the tax expense and, you know, getting a special allocation for that. But, you know, they can actually opt out so they don't have to worry about the credit and then getting a resident credit in their home state. So it complicates it. I think it complicates the decision making, but it allows for, you know, and also maybe like a small share owner just doesn't even want to bother. But, it makes it so the owners that are really going to benefit are the ones that are participating in it, so to speak.
I think that this is bringing us towards the end of our discussion of the PTET, but probably the most important thing that we haven't discussed yet is, you know, who is the PTET most beneficial for? I know it's something that we talk about sometimes at the end of our PTET seminars, but like, who really should be using PTET? Because it's not necessarily for everyone, and it's not going to benefit every owner of a partnership or of an S-Corp.
I certainly think that the PTET is a benefit for anyone who anticipates that, including the tax on their flow-through income from a pass-through entity. Their state and local tax expense would be in excess of $10,000. Now, you know, if it's $11,000, maybe you don't care about losing the federal tax deduction on that $1,000. You know, maybe that's only $250. But, you know, if it's $100 million, then all of a sudden it's a really big number, right? So it will help everybody that has a state and local tax expense in excess of $10,000. But it probably really only matters to folks that are paying more than $100,000 in state and local tax, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the first step is always to do the math. What is the federal deduction that you're, you know, losing out on or will get the benefit of? But I also think there's sometimes some other nuances, like flow-through entities with a smaller number of owners who are more or less similarly situated, right? That's going to be a better fit, because if you have 100 partners and they're all residents of different states and you've got special allocations and you've got partners that maybe, or you don't have a special allocation and you have corporate partners that their share isn't going to be included, and then you have to kind of figure out how you're going to make all your partners whole, that can be a very complicated discussion. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, if it's going to be a huge benefit and you've got one 90% owner, well, that person is probably going to drive the bus. But if it's really spread thin and there's not a huge, huge benefit, maybe it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, Liz's point is well made. You know, when you get into owners in a bunch of different states and owners that might include corporate owners or owners that are partnerships for whom or for which the computation of the tax and the credit might be different, it gets sort of three-dimension chess-like and gets really complicated. But I should, you know, go back a little bit. I said $100,000. That's not true. It's actually lower than that. Like, I think if you've got a $20,000 income tax liability, this is probably worthwhile. And if most of it comes from a pass-through entity that you're taxed on, it probably is worthwhile.
Will we have entities available for those who miss the election deadline?
No. We tried that. and it turned out that there's a market for them, but the market is pretty much what you paid to form them, and we don't want to go through the hassle of it just to get back what we paid for them.
It was great, though. Every once in a while, we have a harebrained scheme that, you know, is a lot of we get really excited about, and maybe it doesn't work out. But we had fun talking about it, didn't we?
Well, it was a great idea, except that in that year that we formed all those entities and had them on a shelf just waiting for people, that was the one year that New York State passed a law to extend the time for the election to September 15th.
Well, what could have been?
You're right.
That's right.
You know, I started this podcast opening it up with talking about how PTET can be an annoyance to accountants and can be sometimes unnecessarily complicated or confusing. But I hope that for our listeners, this conversation distilled the information in a way that just made it more digestible, more manageable. It is, at the end of the day, something that is complex, but not something that is so complex that it should be avoided. In fact, we would encourage you, as Chris said, to utilize it in, you know, most situations. assuming you are eligible. There's a lot more that we could talk about on this topic realistically, but we are coming towards the end of our time. So I will turn it over to each of you for any parting thoughts or concluding remarks before we wrap things up.
You know, the only thing I would say, I guess the concluding remarks would be, here in New York, although there are lots of complications here as far as who's eligible and what you include in the base, the filing is actually pretty simple. And New York does have a really lovely YouTube video of the election and filing process and your online account. And so if you want some idea of what it looks like, I would go there because it actually is fairly useful and there is a fair amount of information on New York's website. So I'll give kudos to New York for that. But, you know, think about it early and talk to your advisors early as to whether you want to elect in.
Yeah, other than the early required election date, I think New York State has done a fantastic job administering it and passing a law that makes sense.
Well, we will leave it at that. High praise for New York at the end of one of these podcasts. That might be the first time, but perhaps not the last. Well, Liz and Chris, thank you both again very much for joining me today. This was an excellent discussion, one I'm sure that our listeners will enjoy. Until next time, this has been State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo. We'll see you soon. Thanks for joining us for another episode of State Tax Talks. If you're interested in listening to more episodes, we're available on all platforms where podcasts can be found, including YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode of State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo, please give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're in need of a tax professional, you can contact the tax attorneys at Hodgson Russ. Go to www.hodgsonruss.com for more information. And until next time, I'm Joe Tantillo, and this is State Tax Talks. Catch you later, tax fans. The comments contained in this podcast do not constitute legal advice. The opinions herein are the opinions of the speakers and not the official opinion of the Hodgson Russ Law Firm.